You are now tuned in to the Nancy Ruffin Show.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of the Nancy Ruffin Show. I am your host, Nancy Ruffin, and this week I wanted to spend some time talking about this idea about defeating Goliath. You know, many of us are very familiar with the Bible story of David and Goliath, of how this small, young shepherd boy beat and overcame this huge giant, right? And so for this week's episode, I wanted us to really think about the giant in our own lives that seems like it's impossible to beat, right? So I want to talk about what problems right now might seem too big for you. They might be overwhelming you. You might feel like you're drowning. You can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. You might find yourself in a season where the situation that you're in seems hopeless. There's so many times that we find ourselves in the valleys of life, and it feels like we're never gonna find our way out, like we're never gonna be able to climb out of that hole, because no matter what happens, right, no matter how hard we try to get back up, it seems like life is knocking us down. And so I want to talk about that today. But before we get into all of that goodness, I just want to take this opportunity to kind of do a check-in, a pulse check, let you all know what's going on with me. I just recently celebrated my birthday, okay? 44 years young. And I will tell you that every year that I get to celebrate a birthday, I meet the new year just full of gratitude, because I recognize that not everyone gets that blessing, you know? And so every year that we are alive is just another opportunity for us to continue to do what God has put us on this earth to do, right? And that also means that our work here isn't done yet. So when we are blessed and graced with another year of life, that means that God has plans for our lives, right? It means that he still can use us to do something in this world. And it's okay if you haven't figured out what that thing is for you. All that means is that you still have time to discover that and to really dig deep within yourself and ask yourself those really important questions, right? Like, what am I supposed to do with my life? What is my purpose? You know, and I mean, you guys know, you've been rocking with me for quite a long time. So I do talk a lot about purpose because I feel like that is our duty while we're here on earth, to figure out what we have been called to do and then to create a life that allows us to live that purpose out. And so my birthday, it was so incredible, you know. On Wednesday, May 19th was my actual birthday, and I spent it with my beautiful family. The kids created some homemade birthday cards, which I absolutely prefer, just because I feel like it's really easy to go to a store and purchase something. But when they take the time out to just really sit and to be creative and to think about what it is that they want to make for me, that for me just touches my heart in a whole other way. And then we were able to go out to dinner, and this was the first time that we have gone to a restaurant since this entire pandemic has started. And it felt really good just to be out. It's funny because I used to take going out to a restaurant for granted. And I will tell you that I will never take that for granted ever again. We were lucky. We went to this hibachi spot, and it was empty. So we were seated at a table all to ourselves. We had the chef all to ourselves. The kids had a really great time. Me and the hubby had a great time. And then after dinner, I headed over to my sister's house because it is a kind of family tradition where she bakes birthday cakes for anyone in the family who is celebrating a birthday. And so to keep with the tradition, she has since passed the baton to my 18-year-old niece, and my niece baked me a cake. And they sang happy birthday, and we enjoyed cake as a family. And it really was just the perfect way to start this new year of life, this new revolution around the sun. And then over the weekend, my girlfriends, and of course my sister and my Titi Millie, those of you who follow me on social are very familiar with Titi Millie. She's everyone's favorite Titi. And we all went out for a girls' night out. We went out to dinner. They treated me. I have to say that we went to this very pricey restaurant, and the whole night we were just cracking up, making jokes, talking, taking guesses as to what the bill was going to be at the end of the night. Talking about somebody was going to have to stay and wash dishes. But it was so much fun. It was just, you know, great to just be around women who love me, who support me, who have really allowed me to grow into myself, you know. And I say that because the friendships that I have with these women, they span years, right? In some cases, you know, the friendship is almost 30 years old. And when we think about the longevity of friendships like that, when we think about the different phases that one goes through in life, just as a point of growing up, right? We're constantly growing. So, of course, who I am today is not who I was at 18. I'm not who I was at 25 or who I was at 30 or even 35. And so to have the same core group of women in my life that have allowed me to find myself, to grow into myself, to grow into being a better friend, you know, because I will say that I have not always been a good friend. I have always shown up, you know, in those moments that, you know, are necessary. Like, God forbid, if, you know, there's a death in someone's family, like, I'm there for all the important moments. But there were times where I didn't show up, you know. And so I'm grateful that my friends allowed me to grow up, not only to grow up, but to also step into my own awareness and recognize in the areas of myself that I needed to develop to become a better friend. And the way that I was able to do that is by witnessing the kinds of friends that they have always been to me. And these women have been incredible friends. They, to me, to even call them friends, it's almost dishonoring the sanctity of the relationship, because I consider these women like my sisters. That is just how close we are. It's how much I love them. You know, the bond is just super tight. And so the same way that I would never, you know, just discard my own sister, I could never see myself discarding any of these women in my life. That's just how tight the friendship is. And I'm just grateful. I'm grateful to have them. I'm grateful that we have been able to grow together, right? Because as I've grown, they have also grown. And sometimes, you know, relationships that start off when we're really young don't last, right? Because people tend to grow in different directions, and not by fault of any one person, but our experiences, you know, have a lot to do with who we grow into, our morals, our values, the things that start to become important to us, and then other things become less important. So like all of those things, you know, really bond people together. And sometimes when the bonds are made, those are trauma bonds, right? So sometimes you connect with people based on your respective trauma and your ability to connect on certain maybe toxic experiences that you've both had. But what happens is when one person starts to heal themselves from that toxicity and from that trauma, and the other individual maybe has not, and they continue to stay in that space, you know, those two individuals tend to grow apart because now you're no longer bonding over the thing that connected you. You know, and I say all that to say that I have had relationships that I've outgrown, and I'm okay with that. Like, I've come to a place in my life where I'm grateful for that relationship, for what it taught me in that specific phase, you know, in my life. And I'm okay that it has, that I have moved on from it. And in that same vein, it allows me to be grateful for the relationships that have withstood, you know, all of my growth, because those bonds, I feel, are rooted in something much more deeper and healthy, and love, you know. And I think that that's really what we all should be striving for in all of our relationships, whether they're our friendships, whether they're our romantic relationships, whether it's the relationships that we have with our family members. We should be cultivating and nurturing those relationships out of love. And if any of the connections were made out of trauma bonds, it's okay to let the relationship go. You do not have to be tied to anything that does not serve you in this season of your life. You know, it's important that you start to become aware of the people around you, of the people who are in your circle, and the role that they play in your life, right? Because at a certain point in our lives, we want to make sure that we are surrounded by people who nurture us, who fill us up, who teach us, who guide us, who support us, who encourage us, right? We want these positive relationships in our lives. What we don't want is to be surrounded by negativity, negative energy, people that tend to remind you of your past or bring out, you know, the worst in you. Those are not the kind of people that you should be surrounding yourself with, because the people that you want in your life should be encouraging you to become better, right? And they should be filling you with more good stuff than bad. And, you know, and I say all that to say that sometimes the people that we love the most are not always the best people to have in our lives. And so if you haven't done, you know, an inventory recently of your circle, of your friendships, of your relationships, you absolutely should, you know, and take each individual and ask yourself, like, is this person good for me at this stage in my life? Do they support my growth? Do they support where I see myself in the future? Right? And if they don't, then you may just have to distance yourself from them, right? And not saying that you have to stop loving them, you just have to love them from afar, just so that you can grow into the best version of yourself. You know, and I've always been very intentional about that. And when I first started on my own healing journey, it was really painful to let go of certain relationships. But once I started to prioritize my own mental health, my own emotional stability, and my own joy and happiness, it was easier to let those relationships go, right? And I don't want to say it was easy, because it wasn't easy. Some of those relationships, you know, the friends I had for a really long time, you know, 15, 20 years. And when you break up with a friend, it's like breaking up, you know, with a partner. And sometimes even more so, because your friends share so much more with you, you know? And so you have to allow yourself to mourn the death of the relationship. But like with anything, you go through the healing process, right? And you grieve it and you allow yourself to cry and you allow yourself to go through the emotions, but then you push forward. And then you start to surround yourself with people who are more aligned with where you want to go, you know? And I've been really fortunate that through the Fierce Woman, I myself have manifested just incredible connections by way of some of the women that I have helped on their own journey. And so often what has started out as just a professional relationship with women coming to me because they're seeking guidance, or they're seeking, you know, to invest more in their own personal development, those relationships have turned into real life friendships, some of which have become, you know, women that I really hold near and dear to my heart. And I think a part of that is because I truly care about the people and the women that I work with. You know, I feel that if someone is investing in me as a quote unquote coach, as a teacher, as a guide, I owe them, you know, to be fully vested in their growth and in their success. And I think it's in that the relationship starts to shift from professional to personal. And I just wanted to share that because coming up on June 7th, I'm launching my second cohort of the season, the Power Up cohort. And this cohort is really kind of a mindset shift kind of program, right? So it's designed for the woman who might find herself stuck and doesn't understand why she is still stuck, right? So if you are the one who has identified your goals, you jotted them down, you created the action plan, you knew exactly what it was that you needed to do, but for whatever reason, you still haven't moved on any or some of your goals, we are going to work through why that is happening for you, right? So we're going to help you reclarify and redefine your goals so that we can make sure that your short-term goals are aligned with your long-term vision for your life. Because if those goals are not aligned with where you want to see yourself in the future, then those are the wrong goals for you to be working on. Additionally, if the goals that you've set have been set just to make someone else happy, right? Because it might be the goals that your parents want for you, or your husband wants for you, or your children, or society, or someone else outside of you. It might be goals that the world is saying you should aspire to. If you do not feel fully vested in these goals, you are not going to do what it takes to make them manifest. That's what we're going to be discussing week one. Week two, we're going to be discussing clarifying your purpose, right? Digging deeper into your why, understanding why you want to do something. Why did you set that goal? And if you don't understand the why behind it, that is going to keep you stuck and you are never going to take great strides in completing the goals, because without understanding the why, you're never going to do what is necessary to make that goal a reality, right? And I always say that when you know your why, you can endure anyhow, right? So when you know why you're doing something, when you know why it's important, and you tie that goal to the why, it doesn't matter how hard it gets, you won't give up. Because your why is so strong that the why is what's going to keep you moving. That's week two. Week three, we're going to dig into strategies for helping you to stay focused in those moments where you might find yourself distracted or veering off the path or unfocused. We're going to create strategies to help get you back on track. And then week four, We're going to really dig deep into who we are and why we show up in the way that we do, or why we don't show up at all. And we're going to tap into overcoming those limiting beliefs, right? What are those things that you believe about yourself that have kept you from really fulfilling your calling, your purpose, your goals, all of it? So if you're interested in doing that, we're starting June 7th. And the reason why I stress that is because it's a small group of women. I normally only accept between 3 to 5 women per cohort, because I personally feel that it's in the small, intimate group that the bonds form. You get to know each other on a very personal level. It becomes more intimate. We tend to share more in smaller groups because we don't feel as judged. And it's just mind-blowing, the relationships that form from these groups. And so often the women, even after the cohort ends, they continue to work together collectively as accountability partners to make sure that they're staying on track. So that's one thing coming up. The second thing coming up is my Bible study group, Women of Faith, which I am co-leading with my sister in Christ over in Texas. Yes, she lives in Texas, but we will be co-leading this group together virtually online every week, every Wednesday starting June 2nd, 7 p.m. We will be digging deeper into our faith, right? And understanding who God is in our lives, understanding the promises he made us, and how we hold on and activate our faith during our lowest and darkest moments. So if this is something that you're interested in, just head over to the link in my Instagram bio. I actually have the sign up link right on there, and you can just join. But with that, I'm going to end this segment. When we come back, we are going to dig into the story of David and Goliath. We're going to talk about defeating the Goliath in our lives and what we can do to make sure that we are always honoring our true selves in everything that happens in our lives. Because when we show up as ourselves with God right by our side, there is nothing we cannot overcome. So stay tuned. And when we get back, we're going to jump right back in.
Hello, my name is Avery. You are listening to The Nancy Ruffin Show. Make sure to subscribe and leave a comment if you're new. Hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome back. Thank you for rocking with me for a second segment. If you are new year, not new year, where is my brain? Is this heat, y'all? It's hot in New Jersey. And I think the heat is affecting my brains. But in any case, if you are new here and you have yet to subscribe to the podcast, then do your girl a favor and hit subscribe. And if you love the podcast and you haven't already done so, then leave your girl a comment, a review, a rating, share the podcast with your networks, tell your mama, your papa, your sister, your friends, anybody who will listen to tune in. You know, in the world of numbers and algorithms, comments, ratings, subscriptions, all of that matters. Doesn't really matter to me per se, because I do the podcast for those who tune in, and I feel that my people will find me, right? The ones that are supposed to be tuned into the podcast will find me. However, the algorithm and your support helps to push it out there, so in that way, more people can find me. So if you haven't done so, please do so. But now that we are back, I want to dive right in to this week's topic or message, whatever you want to call it. But it's this idea around defeating the Goliaths in our lives, right? Those insurmountable odds, those things that seem so gigantic, so undefeatable, that we allow it to keep us like paralyzed, kind of like the Israelites when they were, you know, in the midst of this battle with the Philistines. You know, and I just, before we kind of get into the actual story of David and Goliath, this kind of reminds me of when my husband and I were first trying to buy our house. What was it, in 2008? 13 years ago. And I've only recently been reminded of that because we've been thinking about selling our house because we feel that we've outgrown this house and it's time for us to kind of get into a bigger space. When we bought this house, it was just him and I. We didn't have children, you know, so it was good enough for us. But now that we have the girls, we feel like we need more space. So in any case, we've been doing a lot of cleaning and just throwing out things that we haven't used in a long time or things that are useless and we no longer need and are just taking up space. But throughout this process, I was just reminded of all of the obstacles that we faced when we initially wanted to buy this house. You know, I think I was 30 when we purchased the house. And, you know, I remember that during that time, the mortgage broker who was working with us didn't have faith that when we would get approved for a mortgage, and even if we did get the approval, he believed that we wouldn't be able to meet our mortgage payment every month. And this was something that he said to us. can't believe it. But I remember going through that process, how I felt like everything was stacking up against us, because one of the things that he said was that we had too much debt. And really, I had too much debt because my student loan debt was so high that adding an expense like a mortgage in addition to my student loan debt, and then, you know, and then considering the amount of income we were bringing in, he was like, there was no way that we were going to be able to afford it. And I remember sitting in our one bedroom apartment in the Bronx in my bedroom in tears, because I felt like my dream of becoming a homeowner was never going to happen, because I had decided to pursue an education and to take out student loans, and it was these loans that were preventing me from getting the approval, right? So that we end up getting approved for the mortgage. But then at the same time that happens, I start a new job, right? And at the time, the banks, you know, wanted to ensure that who they were lending money to had steady jobs, right? And so steady jobs, they want to see you at a job, you know, for a certain period of time. Now, the fact that I had started this new job, I hadn't even gotten paid yet, right? So I had, because we were supposed to provide pay stubs, like recent pay stubs, like for the last 4 weeks. But the thing was, I had not gotten paid, so I didn't have any pay stubs. And so that was almost like another strike against us. And so what I had to do was get a letter from my employer kind of stating the salary that I was getting paid. But I just felt that like every step of the way, there was another obstacle. And I remember, like, specifically sitting in my bedroom crying. I remember telling my husband, like, I had even regretted going to school because now I have all these loans and we weren't, it was very likely that we wouldn't get approved, you know, for the mortgage, and it would all be my fault, whatever, all of these things, you know. And my husband has always been very faithful. This is a person, like, he was raised in the Catholic Church. He went to Catholic school. You know, he has a really strong faith and belief, you know, in God. And I think at the time, I don't know if my faith was as strong, but, you know, he reassured me. He was like, you have to leave it to God, because if this is meant for us, if this is our house, it'll happen and we're going to get it. And, you know, lo and behold, we provided everything that they asked for, and we ended up getting, you know, the mortgage, and then we closed on our house on August 28th, 2008, and we have been here ever since. And that's just one example from, like, just many moments in my life where I felt like there was no clear path for me to overcome what was happening, right? Because at that point, when you have someone telling you that you don't make enough money, that you have too much debt, that the bank is very likely not going to approve the mortgage, like, you allow that stuff to really get to you. Oh, at least I did. And I just couldn't see, like, I didn't have any control of it, right? Because what could I do? Like, it was what it was. I couldn't miraculously make my student loan debt go away. I couldn't miraculously produce pay stubs. I couldn't, you know, all of these things were out of my control. But the minute that I stepped outside of myself and just said, you know what, I'm gonna give it to God, like, God made the way. You know, and so I don't know what it is that you're going through right now in this season of your life that seems like it's impossible, like it seems like you're never going to get through it, that the burden is just too much for you to bear. I want you to be reassured that if you give it to God, He will make it happen for you. You know, and this is where I really want to talk a little bit about David and Goliath, because in the same way that Israel at the time didn't believe that they could ever defeat the Philistines, here comes little old David, you know, and he beats this giant, Goliath, you know. And just to give you some context, if you're not familiar with the story of David and Goliath, but there was a war in Israel, right? King Saul and the Israelites were fighting the Philistines. One of the Philistines was this giant. Scripture says that he was about 9 feet tall, huge, gigantic man, right? His name was Goliath. He was big. He was strong. The Israelites were afraid of him. I mean, and why wouldn't they be? Like, who would not be afraid of a giant 9 feet tall? You know, and so every night when they were, like, on the battlefield, Goliath would shout to the Israelites, telling them to choose any man from amongst them to fight him, right? And that whoever stepped up, if they fought and they defeated him, that the Philistines would, you know, would retreat, basically, right? But no one wanted to fight him. And so this happened for 40, it happened every night for 40 days, right? But none of the Israelites wanted to fight him. Now, here comes David, right? His brothers were in the Israelite army. David wasn't, because I believe he was a shepherd, but his brothers were. And so David's father, Jesse, would send him to take some food to the brothers that were on the battlefield. So David sees the giant. He hears Goliath, you know, shouting like a crazy man, talking about, give me one of your men to fight me. If y'all win, we're going to leave y'all alone. All of this, right? But David saw that everyone was afraid of Goliath. So then David goes to Saul, and he was like, you know what? I want to fight him, right? But David's brothers got angry because they didn't see, David wasn't a warrior. Like, he wasn't a fighter. He wasn't in an army. He was taking care of sheep. You know, he was a young shepherd boy. I think he was about 15 years old. But David knew that God would help him, right? Because what David knew was that in his role as a shepherd, there had been times when lions and bears would try to come and take his sheep, right? And he would do what was necessary to defeat the lion, to defeat the bear, to save his sheep, right? So he figured if he could beat lions and bears, that he then can also beat this, you know, giant of a man. And on the surface, right, when we look at this story and we consider the average person, right, that would try to fight Goliath, when we look at David and we look at him just at face value, like the whole situation seems hopeless. And I'm sure that that's what it looked like for Saul, for his army, for David's brothers. Like, they're looking at this freaking shepherd boy and thinking, like, how can this boy beat this giant when he hasn't even been trained for battle, right? So it's easy to look at the size difference and believe that David has no chance at winning, you know. So Saul agrees, because what David does is that he advocates for himself, right? And what he tells Saul, exactly what I just said, you know, like, I have been charged with taking care of sheep. I've beat lions. I've beat bears. I know that with God, I can beat Goliath too. So Saul agrees to let David fight Goliath, right? So he dresses David in, like, his clothes, and he puts on his, like, coat of armor. He gives David this helmet. He gives him, like, all the weapons, all the stuff that these warriors, right, that these fighters use in combat. And so David has all this stuff on, but he was like, I can't. Like, this don't feel comfortable to me. This is too heavy. Like, I'm not gonna be able to be my best, right, wearing your stuff. Like, that's not me, you know. So Saul really wanted David to show up as someone who he wasn't, right? Because the reality is, David wasn't, he's not a warrior, he's not a fighter. He had to go in to fight Goliath based on the own skills and talents that he had, but knowing that God would be with him and would use what he equipped him with to defeat Goliath, right? So he refuses to wear the armor. Instead, he shows up as himself and really dressed in faith. Like, because at that point, that's what he has, right? He doesn't have no sword. He doesn't have any shield. He doesn't have anything. He goes up, he shows up as himself, knowing that it isn't by sword or spear that the Lord saves, right? And that is in the Bible. That is in 1 Samuel chapter 17, where, you know, this whole story of David, you're going to find the story of David and Goliath. You know, he says, like, he knows, it's not by the sword that I'm going to win. I'm not going to win by the sword. I'm going to win by having God on my side. And so while the other Israelites cowered from the threats of Goliath, David saw Goliath as this enemy that was defying the army of the living God, right? When we think about the whole stories of the Bible, you know, it's God says that he's going to make Israel this great nation. So because the Philistines came against them, it was as if they were coming against God himself. And so even though the others were terrified by Goliath's size and appearance, David didn't focus on Goliath's size, right? What he did was he focused on his vulnerability. He identified his weak spots, and then he used that vulnerability to defeat him. And sometimes we as humans often do what Israel did, right? We try to succeed by relying on our own human efforts. But the story of David and Goliath reminds us of the kind of faith that saves in the face of our own powerlessness, right? So it's in those moments where we feel like we're powerless, where we feel like we can't go on, where we feel like we can't defeat the Goliath. It's in those moments that God steps in,
right? And he allows us to overcome by his grace and his mercy. And the only way that that can happen, though, is if we believe that it can happen. We have to have the kind of faith that David had, right? Because without God, David could not have defeated Goliath. So victory is not of ourselves, but it's due to the one in whom we put our faith, right? And so we know that John chapter 15, verse 5 tells us, I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. You hear me? Apart from God, we can do nothing. But if we stay close to him, if we seek him, if we remain faithful, then we also can experience the kind of victory that David experienced when he overcame Goliath, understanding that that victory was brought by God himself. You know, and one of the things that I want to talk specifically about, you know, here is that one of the things that we don't hear often about the story of David and Goliath is how flawed David was, right? And sometimes we look at ourselves and we look at ourselves as flawed human beings, as people who have sinned, we're not perfect, and we wonder, or rather, not that we wonder, but we believe that God can't use us for his glory because we're not quote unquote perfect human beings, right? But let me talk to you a little bit about David, right? So if you've ever wondered whether God can use you for his glory, all you got to do is look at David, because one, David was young. Two, he wasn't a warrior at all. He wasn't skilled in fighting. He never fought in a war, in a battle, nothing. He's a shepherd, okay? He used to watch over sheep. He partially obeys his father when his father tells him, you know, to go take this food to your brothers and, you know, and make sure that they eat, right? So here he goes, he takes the food, but instead of taking the food like he was told, he goes directly to the battlefront and he leaves the food with someone else, like the person who kind of maintains all the supplies, right, for the people that are at battle. And then even as he discusses with Saul or tries to convince Saul to let him go fight Goliath, he asks Saul a couple of times, I think it's three times, like, well, if I defeat him, like, what is the reward? What's the reward for the person that defeats Goliath, right? And so David, even though he was fighting, you know, in the name of God, it was partially motivated by his own self-interest because he was concerned with what the reward was going to be for killing Goliath, right? Because if it didn't matter to him, he wouldn't have asked about it. But scripture tells us that he asked about it, I think two or three times. And I think it's verse 25, verse 26, and verse 30. And so when he finally convinces Saul that he can defeat the giant, he also misrepresents how he's going to do it, right? So he leads Saul to believe that he's going to defeat Goliath like hand to hand, right? Like, you know, like one-on-one, the way we kind of say, you know, today. But that's not how he defeats him. You know, we know that he shows up on the battlefield and he kind of breaks the rules because he sneaks a slingshot and that he uses that slingshot with a pebble, you know, to hit Goliath like right in the middle of the head. And we know that that's how he defeats him. Right. And he breaks the rules because that is being sneaky. However, in his sneakiness, he is also utilizing his gift and his talent, right? Because it's probably the same way that he's been able to defeat lions and defeat bears. So he has used the skill and the talent and the gifts that God has equipped him with to step into this battle to defeat this giant. And so he partially obeys his father. He's partially, you know, motivated by his own self-interest. He breaks the rules, right? But none of this stops God, right, from helping him overcome in the situation. Because even though none of these things in and of themselves can be described as outright sin, what it does show is that David is human, right? He's not perfect. He is not this picture perfect frame of character, of integrity, right? That we might have thought that he was. You know, he was a flawed human being like all of us. And so I say all that to say that let this story be encouragement to you that God works through flawed people. You know why? Because we are all flawed. We are all sinners. And we're going to continue to sin until the day that we die, because the journey with God is a lifelong journey. And so the prayer should always be, God, make me more like you and less like me. But that's a journey, right? It doesn't happen overnight. And so all of us are complex characters, just like David was. And our best moments in service of God are undoubtedly tainted with selfish motives, right? So even though we want to advance the kingdom of God, we might be showing up, you know, to do God's work. There is still some part within us that is motivated by something else, right? And the reason that that is because none of us has arrived, right? Like, we're never going to arrive. We're never going to be completely sinless. Because if we were, what would that mean? That we would be perfect, right? And then what would that mean? That we would be like Jesus. But you know what? We're not perfect. And the only perfect person is Jesus. So if we know that, we know that we're always going to be sinners. Yet, thanks to Jesus' death and resurrection, our sin is not counted against us. And God works through us continuously to establish his kingdom. And so even in your own David and Goliath moment, even if you're faced with whatever giant situation, know that God can use you right where you are with what you have to defeat the giant. You just have to stay faithful. You have to enter that battle with God, knowing that the victory is not going to be yours, but the victory is going to be God's, right? And despite David's flaws, his words and his actions is what sets him apart. Unlike Saul, like Saul was the king of Israel at that time. He was the head of the army. But he did not fight Goliath, okay? Every night Goliath called out talking about somebody come and fight me. Saul didn't step up. So imagine if the ruler of Israel couldn't step out to defend her. Like, he didn't even have what it takes to rule, right? And so that is how David kind of steps into the role of king, right? Because he proves himself to be a worthy successor to the throne of Israel. He doesn't hesitate to run into battle and defend Israel. And he shows that he is better than Saul and worthy to rule. But David relies on God to help him to save Israel in this way. And so, as David defeated the Philistines, right, it kind of foreshadows the coming of Jesus in a way, right? Because we know that this story is in the Old Testament, right? So this is before Jesus was born. And we know that Jesus is of the line of David, right? So the same way that David defeated the Philistines, so would the coming Messiah defeat the enemy. Like David, he will rule in Jerusalem, right? So it's almost like David's story mirrors or foreshadows the coming of Christ, you know? And so the same way that David was a shepherd, what was Jesus? A shepherd, right? We know this. But it was only through David's faithfulness in God that he was able to confidently step up and show up against Goliath and be victorious. So before I end this podcast, I want to end it with some encouragement. I want you to dig deep in your faith. That situation that you are currently in, that seems so dark, that seems so bleak, that the mountain seems so immovable, you know, you can't climb it. It feels like you're never going to get to the top. Like the door that you're trying to open feels like it's jammed shut. The darkness that you find yourself in, I want you to let all of the non-belief go. I want you to let it go and I want you to give it to God. I want you to get down on your knees in prayer and call out to the Lord and tell him that you are entering this battle with him by your side, and that you know with him, you're going to fight that line. You're going to find the light at the end of the tunnel. You are going to climb to the top of that mountain. You are going to break down that door. You are going to come out on top of this situation, whether it's a health situation, whether it's a relationship situation, whether you find yourself at a crossroads at your job. Maybe you don't get along with your boss. You don't know how you can take it another day. You don't know how you're going to show up to work tomorrow. You're going to show up with God by your side because God is going to fight the battle. All you have to do is show up. Let it go, give it to God, and let him fight your battle. Until next time, mi gente, be out there, be well, be safe, love yourself, love each other, and go out there and crush your goals.
Thank you for listening to the Nancy Ruffin Show. I hope you enjoyed spending your time. Bye.